All right, on this episode of Bouks Talking Bouts, excited to be talking to an individual who will be competing at BTC 18, and that goes down on December the 10th. It is an intriguing fight with Jesse Ronson and Nordin Asra getting out there and testing skills, and always good getting to talk to Jesse before these big fights here. So how's the training going leading into this particular one, man? It seems to be going really well.
Training's been going good. You know, it was a quick turnaround from my last fight. That last fight that I had left a very sour taste in my mouth. I felt that I was winning the fight. I was getting caught with the stupidest shit that I never, ever get caught with. So I'm not that I was getting lazy, it's just that I was getting cocky. The game plan was working perfectly, but again, I lost the fight ultimately, and very upset I lost my UFC contract there. So I definitely want to get back in the win column as quick as possible. So it's not like I let myself get that far out of shape.
Yeah, so when did you get notice of this quick turnaround opportunity then? Like, when did, I guess, the bout offer come your way? Because it seems to have come at, like, an ideal kind of juncture, like at least getting one more in the calendar year.
I think in, like, 4 weeks. You know, it was a short notice. Like, I think I found out at the beginning of November. So, yeah, I would have had, like, 5.5 weeks to train for this fight, which is perfect. I think my issue is I have a very difficult time when I have a long time to train. Like Rafa Garcia, I knew about that fight 5 months in advance, right? And then Joaquin Silva, even though he took it short notice, I was already training for Vince Michelle. And that was like another 12-week camp. So it's like I do my best work when I have the least amount of time to think about it and let it stew. Like I had a conversation with Gavin Tucker, a UFC fighter, who says he loves to stew and think about stuff and get anxiety and stuff like that. Whereas me, it's killing's as easy as breathing. I can just turn it on and off like a light switch, and that's what I like to do. I don't want to sit there and think about all the things that I want to do and whatever else. I just want to go out there and do it and like let my, you know, training do the talking instead of, you know, overthinking it, which is what I've been doing recently. So, you know, 5.5 weeks is enough time for me for Nordin and Asri.
Well, I think it speaks to the physical preparedness too. I mean, it's definitely like a lifestyle kind of thing for you. Like, it doesn't seem like you, you know, really like take a lot of downtime in as far as like it would have like depreciating returns on what you're doing or anything like that. So yeah, I mean, that has to be a big benefit, just the consistent physical readiness.
Yeah, it's just over time because of the way I train. Naturally, I've been putting on muscle, so just making 55 is it's difficult. So it's like having, you know, I wish the UFC would be like, okay, we want you to fight on March 16th. Perfect. Don't tell me against who. Just let me know that that's the date that you're going to get me, and then tell me my opponent 4 weeks out. I would appreciate that. So this way I could get in shape, train hard, you know, train my strength and everything else, and then, you know, 4 weeks to prepare for this guy. Like, so with Nordin Asri, you know, he's an older guy from Germany. Like, he fights in his own promotion. So it's like, I told my coaches, I was like, don't even worry about watching tape. Like, we'll figure it out. We'll watch his last fight or whatever fight we can get. Just one of them, and we'll just go from there. Like, I didn't watch any tape on Nicholas Dalby. I didn't watch any tape on Troy Lampson. You know, it's like all my TKO fights, I didn't watch any tape on guys. Like, it's just, I get inside my own head when I start worrying about them, and then my coaches start worrying about them, and then it's like, let's train our strengths. Like, Jesse Ronson is good everywhere, so, you know, we can just do what we want to do instead of worrying about what they're going to do. And it always happens when we have, you know, 12-week training camps. It's just a pain in the ass. But, yeah, now I'm not fighting at 55 ever again unless there's an insane amount of money thrown at me. I'm in a position right now where I'm getting tons of fight offers all the time. And if you want me, you'll fight at the weight that I want to fight at. And if there's other offers, then whoever pays me the most is getting me.
Well, I mean, that's great to hear. It's not really surprising, though. I mean, the resume you have really speaks for itself. But I did see the Facebook post you had there where it really seemed like you were open to a myriad of different options. Just kind of, you know, like you put it, wherever the money is sort of thing. It seemed like Bellator and ONE had a level of interest to you, but also you mentioned BKFC, which I thought was kind of an intriguing one. I could see you doing well in something like that.
I have exceptionally good boxing, all around boxing. I'm talking head movement, footwork, everything. And when it's just hands involved, like I'd say that's one of the best parts of my game is just flat out boxing. When there's no takedowns, no kicks, none of that other stuff. It's like I do well with all the other stuff when I can put it together well. But when it's just straight flat boxing, everyone's like, holy fucking shit, dude. Like, I think you should have just became, you know, a boxer. But then I look at the size of my body and I was like, there's no way. Like, if I was to be a pro boxer, I'd have to change everything. And I, to be honest, I probably would fight at 147 pounds in a boxing world. But then I look at the BKFC roster and I will fight at 175, 100%, and I will be a world champion if BKFC throws some decent money at me.
You know, hopefully Dave Feldman is listening to this. I mean, I definitely, you know, just as a guy that even does like the BKFC rankings, like kind of as part of that panel, I could see you being able to, you know, jump into that like deeper end of the division right away. So very much an intriguing kind of thought there.
I would. The thing is, it's like, you want me to fight the deeper end of the division, you got to pay me the money. You know what I mean? I'm not just going to go in there on, like, UFC, for example, always giving me entry-level contracts. And, you know what, I'm fighting the entry-level guys or whatever, dude. Like, Joaquin Silva had been in there for 7 years. There's no way he was making entry-level money. Same with Vince Michelle. Whatever it is. Like, if you want me to fight high-end BKFC guys, you're going to start. I think I'm year 2-0 pro kickboxing. You know, like I said, if the money's right. Same with Bellator. If the money's right, I'm definitely, because Bellator's down for catch weights. You know, I'd be down to do 165 or even 170 against some of the Bellator guys out there. 1FC, like you said, would be perfect because there's no weight cutting, so I get to fight guys my size that are fresh. And you know, I like. A lot of people say, dude, you do a lot of damage at 170. Like, why don't you just do that? The thing is, it's like people have the cutting down to a science. And, you know, in the UFC, the 170 guys are absolute monsters. They're freaks. And it wouldn't work. But everywhere else, I look at these guys and I'm like, you know what? I can definitely hang there. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and one championship is interesting.
I'm going somewhere with other fight offers other than the BKFC thing. It's like I've been offered Shane Campbell for March. I've been offered Robert Serres for Samurai in February 165. I was offered a kickboxing fight. I threw out Dejan Kajic. If he can make 170, I'd fight him for the BFL title sometime in March. Like, I'm open for big fights because if I lose one more time in the MMA, I'm not going to fight MMA ever again. Like, I'm not going to quit fighting, but I'm just done with MMA. So I want, if I'm going to lose, I want it to be against a worthy opponent. And, you know, so that's why, like, the Shane Campbell, the Jan Kajic, you know, Robert Serres just beat Gil Lorenzi, even though he's only 7-3. It's intriguing, but, like, I'm not fighting for pennies anymore. It's going to be where the money's at. So if BKFC throws a good offer at Bellator, I'm not going to fight these local guys for the shit money that they're going to pay.
Well, I mean, a Shane Campbell fight would be quite intriguing. I mean, that's like two of the, you know, higher-end talent in the country fighting each other. So, yeah, that would be, you know, super interesting. I guess maybe we were talking about, like, to the point of, like, not necessarily, like, actively, like, overthinking about, like, what other people are doing, but would there be a level of, like, looking at that upcoming Shane Campbell fight in Toronto? Like, are you maybe thinking you'll be at that Unified Ontario show, or perhaps not?
Has improved on his, I've trained, and he's improved on his grappling game and then being able to put everything all together. But the thing is, he's still the same old Shane Campbell with the same tendencies and the same style. He's just gotten better everywhere, just like I have. The problem with the Shane Campbell fight is that the very first time I fought Shane Campbell in 2012, I got $7,500. You know, $3,500 to show and $3,000 to win. So it's like, I'm not fighting him for now. We both had you. FC Stanley Max and all that other stuff. Like, Unified wasn't. Z Promotions offered me 4-4. And I was like, dude, that's like $500 more than what I made 10 years ago. No thanks. Give me more money. Right? So it's like, I have all these fights out on the table. I'm not refusing them, but I definitely want to get paid to do them.
No, yeah, it needs to, you know, make sense on a couple different ends there for sure. And I'm just kind of curious, like, I mean, I feel like you're probably training at, like, the similar kind of spaces there. Like, it seemed like adrenaline has always been a fixture, and getting in work with some of, like, the NTT lads and stuff like that. I know you were saying this is, like, a bit of a more succinct camp, which ultimately, you know, works in your favor. But are you kind of working with similar individuals like Adam Asenza, Clay Pye, Aaron Jeffrey, that sort of thing?
I would. I've been at BTC every Saturday sparring. I travel down to Hamilton with my one kickboxing coach. You know, we've had some people stop in at Adrenaline. The thing is with Norden Asri is that he seems like a generic brawler. And I've had people look at tape. Like, I've had Adam Asenza look at tape, and he goes, "Dude, I'm not going to mimic this guy." And I'm like, "Why not?" He's like, "You will fucking kill me if I do what this guy does." He's like, and then I get all these assortments of fighters. I get grapplers to look at them, strikers to look at them. I even get, like, individual, like, kickboxers, just straight up kickboxers or boxers to look at them, just straight up wrestlers to look at them. And they're like, "Dude, like, this." So I don't need to get over in my head about it. All these people are telling me what type of guy this guy is. So it's like I'm not spending a ton of money like I did for Joaquin Silva to travel down to Niagara Top Team, you know, and stay there for 4 days in a week and whatever else. I am still traveling to train because I got to take it serious. I'm not overlooking this guy by any means, but yeah, the training partners I get are Saturdays at BTC.
Well, I mean, I think just with, like, how, you know, great the gym culture is in the Ontario area, like, it seems like you'd be working with a lot of those guys anyway. Like, it seems like NTT guys go to BTC and, you know, other guys go to Aegis and, you know, some guys go to Adrenaline and stuff like that. Like, I mean, like, a little more out of the way, but just to say there's that, like, crossing over and, you know, everything like that. So probably working with some of those guys anyway, I would think, a little bit at least.
The room is fucking stacked on Saturdays. It's ridiculous the amount of guys are there. And then it's like, even though I may not be training with them, you know, it's knowledge and, like, word of mouth. Like, just speaking with these guys is more than enough for training. It's like you get, it's like, "Yeah, I'm fighting this guy. He likes to do this." And you show them a clip and they're like, "Oh man, like, yeah, what you do here and what you do here," like, that's enough. You know, with my level of experience being in the game as long as I have, like, just having a sit down with high level fighters and just talking is like a training session for me. Like, I can learn a lot from that and gain from that. And like I said, that room at BTC on a Saturday with all the coaches and fighters are there. It's crazy.
Yeah, and you kind of touched on it there a little bit with, like, the financial component. Like, one of the last times we were talking, you were mentioning, like, starting a GoFundMe and how that seemed to kind of help out. Was there any sort of crowdfunding dynamic for this one, or more just, you know, what you were talking about there, like, maybe not, like, traveling as much and trying to minimize costs where and when you can?
That GoFundMe definitely saved my ass. Like, it allowed me to travel and train and bring my coach with me. This time I didn't need it because I still had money left over from my UFC pay. And like I said, the turnaround was so quick. Like, I needed to fight that October 1st or else I'd be broke. Like, I wouldn't have money for rent for October or November if I didn't take that fight. So, like I said, having that fight with Joaquin Silva definitely, you know, put some money in my pocket, so I didn't need to start a GoFundMe for this one.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a lot of hard work. It's very hard on my wife, too, because she's home, and she's got to take care of the dog. She's got to clean the house. She's got to do so much, because she understands. She's very understanding, and it's like, she knows how hard it is on me, so she doesn't really bug me. She bottles it up inside, and I can see that she, like, secretly hates me. But it's very hard on her, so it's like, I definitely, and she even brought it up. She's like, "You know, I was really hoping you'd be around more, but no, you jumped right back into another training camp, and, you know, I was, like, relying on you to stay home so we could do some things and, you know, clean and get back, you know, routine, but it's like, you just had to jump into another fight." I'm like, "Well, it fell into my lap, and I was told that I needed to get this win in order for BKFC and, you know, Bellator to look at me, or else I'd just be, you know, wandering aimlessly around the local circuit if I still wanted to fight." But anyways, yeah, so she's my rock, and she's definitely helped me, and she's a fucking super soldier. And, yeah, it's really hard on her. So I wasn't, even if I needed to travel, I probably wouldn't have done it for this camp, only because it's 5 weeks, like, there's one thing, you could be training for 10 weeks, but then if you have 5 weeks to get ready for me and I only have 5 weeks to get ready for you, there's only so much you could do in that 5 weeks. So
Yeah, I mean, makes a lot of sense when you lay it out in that kind of regard there. But it seemed like you guys were in good spirits at the last PFC event. Looked like you guys cleaned up nice there. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, someone that usually helps you in regards to, like, the medicals and things like that, like the King, Faisal Rahman, like, he got to step in and, you know, engage in a little mixed martial arts action himself and didn't necessarily go his way in, like, the winner-loser binary, but it seemed like a great experience for him in a certain sense. Like, what was it like seeing, you know, King Faisal get out there and, you know, put on the 4-ounce gloves and do his thing?
It was scary. Like, I have a soft spot for the King, you know, being what he is and what he does for a profession. But also, you can't, if somebody wants to do something, you can't tell them no. Like, he's been wanting to fight and do all that stuff. Do I believe it was an early stoppage? Yes. Am I happy that the fight got stopped and he was okay? Yes, no problems, whatever else. It's like, I don't want him getting hurt or anything lasting to happen to him. That would just, it would really bother me. It would make me want to get in there and beat the shit out of the guy that just did that to him. Yeah. So it sucks for him because he told me afterwards that he was upset that it was such an early stoppage. They should have just let him go. But then I was like, King, there's too many people that rely on you. There's too many people that care about you that want to see you get disfigured over something dumb. Because I'm like, to be honest with you, knowing the success that he had with what he did in round one, he would have done it exactly the same way in round two, and he would have mounted you earlier, and it would just got worse. And then the same thing with round three, right? So it's I'm like, just be happy that you got to get in there and do it, and it's more than what most people can say.
Yeah.
Said, like, if you want to, you know, do this again, we can just pay somebody and we'll do it behind closed doors at the gym. So this way, you know, if you want to beat somebody up or whatever, we'll do it that way.
No, that's well articulated, man. And I mean, he is such, like, a, you know, great fixture in the combat sports community for sure. But I mean, in terms of, like, facing a lot of resistance in fights and stuff like that, I thought you had a very interesting post a little bit ago where you were saying overcoming adversity in a fight is literally the biggest thing a fighter can do and the best feeling afterwards. And I thought that was a very poignant kind of thought, and I guess it got me thinking, like, was there a moment in your career that, as I'm kind of talking about that, that you immediately kind of think about and connect to? Like, was there a moment where you overcame a lot of adversity and I guess had that kind of cathartic moment when you turn the tides and, you know, get the win?
Oh yeah, I've had it a few times. The first time is when I fought Brad Causey. He was 10-1, I do believe, with 10 knockout wins. I was going into his backyard. I took the fight on 3 weeks' notice. They put me up in some shit hotel. I literally had to cut weight by cranking the shower and just sitting in the bathroom with the steam. It was fucking hell. But either way, this guy kicked me in the ball so fucking hard in the first 20 seconds of the fight that, like, I'm not going to lie to you, my left nut is, like, permanently damaged. It's one quarter the size of the other one, and, like, I swear to God, it doesn't work anymore. And I was in the corner, and I was like, holy fuck. Like, everyone's like, are you okay? Like, come on, you got 5 minutes. But people just didn't understand. In my head, I was like, if I do not get back out and fight this guy as soon as possible, get my adrenaline going, I will not be able to fight. Like, it'll be crippling. And I'm glad, you know, I talked myself into, you know, after it's about 30 seconds, I'm like, let's just get this going, right? We've got the fight going. I dropped him, you know, momentum, adrenaline, whatever else. Long story short, I beat the guy by knockout in the first round. By the time I get to the back to get paid, I couldn't even walk. My balls hurt so much. By the time I got back to the hotel room, they were both swollen, and, like, my dick was completely black, and my balls were so big and swollen. They were the size of each of my fists. It was, like, it was bad. Like, I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Another time, when I fought Shane Campbell, in the second, I had dropped him twice in the first round. He came back, rallied in the second. He had hurt me to the body, but then he got me with a clean head kick. And the thing is, the head kick didn't hurt me, but he thought it did, but it was actually the body shot. He pushed me up against the cage, and he was just giving everything and anything he had on these big-ass elbows. Now, at the time, I was 8-0, and this fight, the winner was going to go to the UFC. Now, believe it or not, on the cage, blocking these guys, his shots, because he was just loading up, I could see every shot that was coming. I would put my hands up to block. I go, you know what? I could literally take a knee right now, and this guy will win by TKO, and that'll be it. It'll all be over. I won't take any more damage. And, you know, this is what everybody thought was going to happen. Shane Campbell, the devastating striker, was, you know, TKO Jesse Rounds. This is what everybody thought. But then I go, however, I put all this work in. I'm on an 8-fight win streak. I'm literally on the fucking doorstep of the UFC. If I lose this fight, I'm going to have to do this all over again. Do I have it in me? no, so let's just win this one. And then I just fucking went wild, went back at him, and then I ended up choking him out like 15 seconds after that. That was a huge overcoming adversity moment where it's like, I'm hurt badly. And in my head, it's like, you know, we can just take a knee right now and everything will be all over. This is what everyone will think. You know, nobody's going to talk shit because everyone's like, yeah, this is exactly how it's supposed to play out. But I definitely didn't want that to happen. And it like, it changed. I've had a few moments like that in my fight career where it's like, do I keep going? Do I not keep going? Like, what can I do? Right. It's just overcoming adversity, whether you're hurt. I've gone into fights hurt. I've gone into fights, you know, underprepared, you know, overtrained, whatever it is, bad weight cuts. It's just that adversity. And it's like, if you can overcome it and win, even if you don't win, even if you lose, it's just nobody talks to the loser. And you'd be surprised the amount of shit that losers have to say that's not like excuse wise. It's just, you know, they face their own adversity and they overcame it by getting in the cage. It's like, yeah, it didn't go their way, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I love the level of insight into that. I don't know that there's anything else that I could ask you about at this point that would tie together the interview, you know, as well as that does. So dovetailed nicely there for sure.
A few more stories, like when I fought Matt McGrath and he took me down and he was laying on top of me in the fifth round and there's nothing I could do to get away. And my coach is yelling like, yo, same old Matt McGrath laying on top of you. And then I was just like, you know what? I could sit here and, you know, this is it. Like, this is how Matt McGrath beats everybody. It is what it is. But it's like, I got more in the fucking tank. Like, I don't want it to end like this. Let's fucking go. So I powered my way out of it. I picked him up and slammed him. He re-rolled me. So I got right back up, picked him up and slammed him again and ended the fight in his guard. And I go, this fight's fucking mine, buddy. You know what it is. I have so many stories of just overcoming the adversity in the cage. I have stories of overcoming adversity in training camp through injuries, through emotional and, you know, social problems, family problems. It's just, it's that post that I made, it should speak volumes. And like everybody, you didn't see all the posts that, or I would say you saw what people said, but then people were texting me and they were like, dude, that was fucking deep. And they like, they shared some of their own adversity stories with me. And they're like, you're absolutely right. You grow so much as a fighter when you can overcome adversity in the trenches. It's just, it's such a gratifying feeling. Like I said, whether you win or lose, you can still overcome adversity on both sides.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me so many people reached out to you talking about how poignant and deep of a thought that was, which is, you know, why I wanted to get your insights in this kind of context there. And I really appreciate the, you know, depth of insight into that, man. And yeah, really, you know, articulates like, you know, why it's fun to interview you so much. I feel like you really get into the nitty gritty of it and really talk about the sport on like a deep level like that. But like I was saying before, I do want to be mindful of the, you know, busy nature of your schedule and the fact you have training later and are kind of decompressing a bit. So to that point, is there anything you might want to like add as a parting thought as we're kind of wrapping up, man?
Not much. Like I said, I want, you know, everybody to know one more loss in my MMA career and I'm done, whether it's on the local circuit, Bellator, wherever it is. Like, I'm not giving up on the UFC, but I'm not going back to the UFC if they offer an entry-level contract. Fuck that. I need to get paid now. But one more loss and I'm done MMA forever. That means that doesn't mean I'll stop fighting, but that's just something that I want to say. I just won't spend any more time with 13 losses. That's more than enough. That, and, you know, we already talked about the King. I owe him everything. He rushed my medicals for Ontario. You know, getting a medicals for Ontario is no easy fucking task.
Yeah.
They asked for a lot, and he got it all done. I just got my license today, actually, so, you know, just a big shout-out to the King. Other than that, you guys can see me do work on an opponent. I haven't fought an older guy, somebody older than me, in forever. So you can watch me beat the shit out of the geriatric division December 10th.
Yeah, it's going to be a great fight.
I'm losing to a 44-year-old German that hasn't fought in 3 years. I will fucking die in the cage before that happens.
Well, hopefully it doesn't come to that, but I do love the attitude. Yeah, BTC 18, going to be a great one, though, and I'm looking forward to being there and seeing this fight myself. And just, yeah, thanks for coming on the show. As always, man, I always appreciate a bit of time. And just, yeah, to reiterate, looking forward to seeing the fight in person. And just, you know, you have a good rest of your night too, man.
All right, thank you, sir.